Paper 28, right at the beginning, which is old single column, page 306. However, before we get started, we're going to have a little bit of an extended detour, so you won't have to read right away. we have some unfinished business. Did everyone do their homework? If you remember when we were reading last time, I suggested that if you thought of it, you could spend some time reflecting on a pair of phrases that they used back in the Masters of Philosophy section. Remember the primary supernafim in section 6 there. See, if you want to, you can flip back to page 303 there, to the Masters of Philosophy. Section 6 there in the previous paper. And let me just remind you of what I encourage you to think about a little bit. And I want to talk about it now. Because it is a very important point. But I did want to give you the chance to see if you could reflect on it a little bit and see what you could, you know, you might come up with. The expressions that they put forward there. So there, the first one is in the second paragraph, which is right at the top of old single column, page 303, if you're in the single column. They said that that these masters of philosophy, these beings of wisdom who make use of the truth of knowledge and the facts of experience. So that specific thing, the truth of knowledge and the facts of experience, and then just remind yourself of what they said after that. See, in their efforts to master the unknown, with them knowledge attains to truth and experience ascends to wisdom. Okay, so that last part is pretty obvious. If they're the masters of philosophy, the key facts that they're attempting to manifest, or key phases of reality they're attempting to manifest are truth and wisdom. You see, so they're giving you an understanding of, you know, of this whole bit, you know, these wise men of heaven, etc. You know, I mean, just how they're doing that they're taking knowledge and reaching upward to truth and then trying to culminate experience in wisdom and work with that truth and wisdom. Rather, they think the truth. Okay. But the curious thing is out of the context of that immediate sentence. Just taking those expressions of the truth of knowledge and the facts of experience and comparing it to, in the second to the last paragraph in that section, where they said, and while philosophy can never be as settled in its conclusion in its conclusions as the facts of knowledge and the truths of experience, etc. Okay, so what's going on? In the one case, they say truth of knowledge, facts of experience. In the other case, they say facts of knowledge, truths of experience. Okay, so first of all, notice, okay, whatever these facts of knowledge and these truths of experience are, they're saying that they're very settled. Okay? What they're referring to there is what they were talking about in the previous section. Remember, the previous section is about the custodians of knowledge. And that you had these custodians of knowledge on paradise that were the end point of that long chain of angels that are feeding information upward, you know, in this grand recorder chain all the way up to paradise. And in that regard, you don't have to turn there, but let me just remind you that when they're talking about down to there's the very bottom of that chain of recorders, let's see, I can, just for people's benefit, I can tell them what is it paper 48, isn't it? Yeah. In paper 48, they talk about the lowest group of seraphim that they can really talk about, you know, that they can reveal information about, what they call the transition ministers in section 6 there of paper 48. And so they're talking about all those different types, transition ministers, and they get to the ones that are called the recorder teachers. So that, you know, part of that recorder chain of angels. And they say that these angels are all in the chain of recorders. You know, we're talking about the top of that chain. The chain of recorders extending from the lowest to the highest custodians. See, there's the custodians of knowledge. Highest custodians of the facts of time and the truths of eternity. There's two things that are being fed up this chain. The facts of time and the truths of eternity. Okay? It's the same pair here that they're talking in the Masters of Philosophy section about being settled. The facts of time are these facts of knowledge. The truths of eternity are these truths of experience. Okay? If facts are time-conditioned, truths are timeless. Okay? Now, why are these settled? Because these are objective. Obviously, if they can be fed up this chain, they can't be subjective. They can't be subject to the individual. They have to transcend any subjectivity. They have to be objective in order to be fed up this chain. Okay? These are both the facts of knowledge are objective. Specifically, you know, that's fundamentally what you mean by knowledge. That's in that outer life domain, you have objective facts. Those are the facts of knowledge, and they're the facts of time. Okay. The truths of experience, the truths of eternity, those are the objective truths that you can access even now. Okay, and before I explain any further, you can probably guess where I'm going. See, that this pair is objective. That other pair are the subjective pair. They're a reciprocal pair. Top-down, objective, bottom-up, subjective. They're a reciprocal pair. So the truth of knowledge and the facts of experience, those are subjective. Like, for instance, the contrast between the objective facts, they're in the outer life, the facts of knowledge, and the subjective facts, the facts of experience. Okay? If you give an objective fact form in your mind, that's a subjective fact. You know, it's subject to whatever limitations. I mean, it could be very crude limitations. If you're colorblind, you know, there's a limit to how much you can give a color objective fact form in your mind in some, you know, perfect sense.
So okay? Which one is, yeah. You know, when they say when you resurrect mm-hmm. that your personality comes back, and they mm-hmm. say they really don't know why, they don't know how, they don't know the facts behind it, but they say that you'll experience the truth of it. So maybe yeah. that's one of those things where that's a subjective aspect of experience, correct?
Right, okay, so just that little element is kind of right where we're going next, that contrast, when you say you experience the truth of it, you'll experience the timeless nature of what's going on, that independent of all the details of time and space and, you know, all the facts, you don't know all the facts, all the details, you know that there's something that's transcendent of time, that's part of eternity, because it can go through a whole mysterious sequence and it's reappears.
Right.
See? So it's not subject wholly to time. It must have some relationship to eternity, you know, the truths of eternity. Okay? And okay, so that, so that, that just, you know, back to, okay, so that the fact part, That's the more straightforward in the reciprocal pair, to just appreciate that the objective facts of knowledge you know, on the outside and the subjective facts of experience on the inside. You have the subjective order of mind, okay, and the objective order of external reality. Okay. So that's pretty straightforward. But the contrast between the truths of experience and the truth of knowledge. Okay. Two different truths. The word truth is used in two modes in the book. Okay. We've never really talked about this before, but this is kind of the perfect place to do it right here. Begin to appreciate that. The reason there's two different modes is because when you say truths are timeless, so that's a general statement, okay? Okay, to be timeless, they must be related to eternity, but they could be related to existential eternity, like we just, we're talking about on the Isle of Paradise there with the primary Supernafim, that we were in existential eternity there. And in existential eternity, we learned that, these truths that we're talking about here, these truths of experience, these objective truths, are actually knowledge, quote unquote. Now, I mean, they can be given from one to another because there really isn't an outside there; it's all one inside there. You're in paradise, the inside. So you can have a relationship to a timelessness by having a relationship to existential eternity, or you can attempt to reach all the way forward in time to what the revelators sometimes call future eternity, or you've heard me contrast to existential eternity, experiential eternity. All at the end of all motion and processes, where everything is going, that experiential eternity. That's the basic contrast here. What those master philosophers are trying to do in establishing the truth of knowledge, you remember how they said that they seek to encompass the concepts of the ultimate and attempt to grasp the techniques of the absolutes. See, they're trying to reach all the way forward in the experiential and strike step with a relationship with experiential eternity and the truth that's related to it. But that's obviously a very subjective process. It's all within the subjective order of mind that you're trying to extend forward, and you're reaching, you're going up from the facts of knowledge and the facts of experience. You're bringing that in, the wisdom. Okay. But the other one, the top-down one, these objective truths of experience. So let's just think about that a little bit more. I mean, this chart has been sitting next to me for umpteen years. Some of you have probably noticed that there's two threefold actualities on this chart that have the word truth in it. There's fact, truth, goodness. And then here, there's beauty, truth, goodness. Those two truths are these two different truths, okay? Remember how I pointed out almost always when they talk about beauty, truth, and goodness, they don't say them in that order, do they? They say truth, beauty, goodness. And I pointed that out, why they say, because that's the objective truth, truths of experience that we're talking about here. You come from the top down. Truth is a superadditive consequence of a relationship. You come down through that, the truths that are tied to existential eternity, and then into beauty and goodness, not fact and goodness. The key is whether or not you have beauty or fact there. Okay? That's the truths of existential eternity, and the beauty and the goodness, see, are existential. Beauty is. Genuine beauty is part of this existential threefold phenomenon that you're engaging top down. And, it's sad to record that there's very few people that are functioning top down. So by and large, see, between the lines, what the Revelators are saying almost all the time is most relationship to beauty is delusional, unfortunately. But they're trying to, but the challenge there, you have the word, you know the word. Work on improving your relationship to what that really is, that it's part of an objective threefold system, that you're coming through truth down to beauty and goodness, an existential goodness, okay? A goodness and a beauty that are independent of time and space. They just are. Okay. When you say that the truth of knowledge and the truth of stemming from the facts of knowledge, that's the other one, fact, truth, goodness. When you have truth bonded to fact, facts are time conditioned. See, that immediately makes the truth subjective, relative to all the issues of time and space. And even your relationship to goodness now, that correlation is within the context of space and time. Okay, so the whole system is subjective and relative, that threefold system of fact, truth, goodness. But it's what you are really trying to challenge yourself to do, to go beyond your initial potential of truth, beauty, goodness, more of an existential, I am sort of a manifestation, that consecration of your will to the perfect will of God the Father that initiates you. But like I said, of course, they point out a lot of people really haven't really initiated themselves yet. So there's a lot of work to do there just in that step. Okay, but once you have that, there's even a greater challenge in play to begin to engage this from an experiential domain. One must do something as well as be something. Okay, and to begin to go to that mode where you don't just know that existential truth, but you're trying to get it all the way flipped around where you can think the experiential truth, and the fulcrum that you lever that reciprocal relation about is obeying the truth. To know the truth, obey the truth, think the truth, like we were talking about. So that's actually a very significant pair, it has immediate application when you're trying to understand part four, for instance. They use these two pairs, these reciprocal pairs, to talk about the gospel of the fourth epical revelation. Sometimes they say the fact of the father of fact of the fatherhood of God and the truth of sonship or brotherhood, brotherhood of man or sonship. So do they say fact of the fatherhood and truth of the brotherhood, or do they say truth of the fatherhood and fact of the brotherhood? Okay. Jesus, by and large, knew he was dealing in a pretty limited circumstance, and the revelators know that, by and large, in the world, they still are. And so Jesus, by and large, just said, okay, I want you to try to start with just using your faith grasp to have a fact of experience. But from the bottom up, you grasp up with your faith grasp. I want you to have a fact of experience. I want you to grasp the fact of the fatherhood of God. Okay, so we're using that first pair, the truth of knowledge and the facts of experience. However, sometimes, he knew that was even asking too much to try to get them to actually have a genuine faith grasp. And so he said, well, and if that's too much, just take it as a doctrine. just adopt the doctrine of the fatherhood of God and believe it. Okay, and then from that, you deduce a truth of knowledge, the truth of the brotherhood of man. But see, this bottom up, they're very careful to point out that when you're doing that, all you have is the fact of the spiritual fatherhood, okay, of God, and the truth of the spiritual brotherhood of man. But that's the fourth epical revelation, trying to get it started with the recognition of kindred spirits, the truth, kind of along the lines of what you were talking, example of yours, you know, recognizing the truth of kindred spirits. It's not a fact, we aren't literally spirit beings, but there's a truth there that we're kindred spirits, and you can engage it from that approach. But occasionally in the Jesus papers, they say, okay, what you really want to challenge yourself, though, is to go at it from the top down instead of the bottom up, to go beyond what Jesus, by and large, asked of you as a child of God, to begin to take it on as an adult of God, to get yourself actually up there and go at it from the top down in that truth, beauty, goodness mode, you know, that objective mode, and just definitively recognize, know the truth of the fatherhood of God. See, truth is timeless. In existential eternity, God is your father, period. You know that. You've begun to think independent of time. Remember how they talk about how they say most of the time we're purposely constraining our use of the language here to put it in time terms because we know, just like Jesus, we probably can't expect you to actually let go of time and be in eternity with your thoughts. But you can challenge yourself, okay, to just start with not a belief, not a doctrine, but a direct objective. It's possible. This objective truth is fed up the chain. It's one of those truths of eternity that's fed up the chain. To know objectively the truth of the fatherhood of God. And from that full starting point, where it's no longer a subjective, it no longer has to have the adjective spiritual. You know, he's not just your spiritual father in eternity. He is your father in a whole sense in eternity. Not just your spiritual father. And if you start with that wholeness of relationship to the Father, the eternity truth of it, and go down to the fact of the brotherhood of man, go from the potential for the brotherhood of man to the actuality of the brotherhood of man, kindred minds, yeah. Then you can begin to talk about peace on earth in something besides vainly hoping for the future. So it's actually very significant. I mean, the key thing in part four about the fourth epical revelation is the fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of man. But how are you trying to relate to it as the masters of philosophy will be challenging you to put the finishing touches on your adulthood? The objective mode, or are you still just, trying to faintly grasp up as a child and maybe not even be able to do that, and you have to just believe a doctrine? Yeah. But if you've started, then take the next step. So that's why I wanted to spend a bunch of time here. So you can fit this in. This Masters of Philosophy section, like we saw last time, we unpacked it. It took us a long time to unpack it. It's huge. And see, now I didn't even undo this part, and we've already spent almost a half an hour on just that. Just begin to reflect on that reciprocal pair. Maybe I'll just toss in one thing. When you're reading in that often very deep and imponderable paper, The Supreme and Ultimate Time and Space, there's a section in there called Time-Space Relationships. And see, now what I've just been saying about these two different eternities, so that there's two different modes of truth, when they say, when truth becomes linked with fact, see, that's that. That's the subjective mode, which you're challenging yourself to try to reach towards experiential eternity. When truth becomes linked with fact, then both time and space condition its meanings and correlate its values. And then all those other places in the book where they talk about the relativity of truth, see, they're talking about that truth. They're talking about the fact, truth, goodness mode. Not the existential sort of initiating mode. That is truth, beauty, goodness. It's a fantastic initial mode, but one must do something as well as be something.
Is that why it's not static?
Well, and that's what I'm kind of trying to get at is, you know, there can, to challenge that truth, beauty, goodness, that existential relationship to not just be an end in itself so that it does just ultimately become static. You know, where you just want to meditate upon truth, beauty, and goodness. No, you want to do something with truth, beauty, and goodness. And what you want to do is take that objective initiation that gives you... See, the Father gave you an initial way to get at truth objectively. And it's in that top-down mode. If he didn't give that to you, there's no way that the pump wouldn't be primed to start the process of what the masters of philosophy are up to, what philosophizing is about, of trying to reach forward to transcend the time-conditioned facts of knowledge and begin to eternalize your relationship to things in a dynamic way. Not just, you know, the only thing, you know, people have long tried to somehow just stay there with that initial existential truth by going off in a monastery or something like that and just be present with it. But see, you're so heavenly minded, you're no earthly good. The only way to become earthly good is to use that initiation from the Father. You know, see, only his personality allows you to somehow have a relationship to objective truth before you have hardly any experience. He primes the pump. That's the Father's the initiator. But the whole point of that, you know, is to then try to elevate knowledge to truth and experience to wisdom, you know, just like those masters of philosophy are doing, and begin to take on this great challenge of fact, truth, goodness. Example of, it's like, well, Chris, I mean, yeah, truth appears in two places, but so does goodness. He didn't mention that. Well, yeah, we talk about that often. In an existential sense, goodness equals perfect. In an experiential sense, goodness equals what? Perfecting. Right. This is where, you know, the fact, truth, goodness, that's where you really are. You're not of paradise. You know, none of us are of paradise. We're of time and space. And our goodness is perfecting. It's correlated through time and space. There's an ing there. And just see that failing to distinguish those two truths means you fail to distinguish those two goodnesses, which you immediately drop into this mode where you think in black and white existential terms of perfect and imperfect, and everything comes apart then. You've lost all truth of your life because in truth, you're perfecting, not perfect. If you think you're perfect, that's something the celestials call delusional. You always just come back to that. I mean, that, you know, you're trying to avoid those pitfalls of trying to make the existential starting point everything, of just being instead of using the being so that you can do.
It could happen when you get too much into the top down in our state. I mean, when you try to project that, mm-hmm. you know, or try to cause it to happen, I can see how that would make you.
Yeah.
I mean, your ego could get out of place that way.
And this should bring in you know, I'm part of a domain that's ultimately encompassed by the Supreme. And the Supreme, when we talked about the Supreme and the Supreme papers, we talked about how, you know, they said point blank that to understand the Supreme, you have to start thinking both top down and bottom up at the same time. See, this is the ongoing value of that top down truth, beauty, goodness, existential, eternity, relationship, is that you carry that forward with you. So the top down is always right there next to your efforts to establish a bottom up, so that you know what you're trying to get equal and reciprocal. You know, so it isn't great big and tiny little. And it's like, no, I got to work on that some more. It's not even close to being of equal weight. I'm not yet in tune with the Supreme, the domain that I'm in. I'm still biased to the existential side. Yeah, it's creator unifying deity. You know, the two are coming together. Power personality synthesis, etc. All those, you know, twofold. Okay, so that wasn't you know, what I expected you to come up with, you know, for your at-home assignment, all that. But spend some time, you know, on your own, reflecting on it more. Make sure that you can think through some of that. You know, separate those out, keep them straight in your mind. It'll really help to start to get this twofold reciprocal system that is reality more dynamically, you know, in play in your mind. All right.
Well, I just want to yep. mention too that in the Jesus papers, he teaches that knowledge leads to wisdom, and truth is derived through experience. So it's kind of like the opposite of what...
Well, the truths of experience, Steve, was that objective one.
Yeah.
See, that's your initial handle on truth. You're delusional if you think you have, you know, you start with an experiential relationship to truth. That's impossible. You have to be initiated by the Father. So you start with an existential relationship to truth, you know, that existential eternity. And then, oh, truth is like that. But see, it only goes to beauty. It doesn't go to fact. But I can't just live beauty. This is, you know, there's just fact. I have to deal with facts. So I have to somehow make that translation begin to have the other side playing. So you aren't just trying to bliss, you know, go into some blissing out existential states.
So as you grow up, we need to have all the balance all the way up in order to be stable. And get there stably, so that we're not whipping around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much. Yeah, it gives you stability. You know, and you, the more you have both the facts and the beauty playing off of each other, and then from the two reciprocal perspectives, so you're bringing the whole of the Isle of Paradise into play, because the pattern of paradise is the beauty. You know, the actuality of paradise is the fact. It's an actuality and a reality. There's the actuality and the purposed actuality. See, you can begin to master. You know, we talk about the masters of philosophy. You talk about the master architects. You talk about the master sons, the master spirits, the master physical controllers. All of them, see, are attempting to bring pattern into relationship with, you know, the mere actuality. Okay, to bring beauty into fact, for instance. Okay. You notice on that one when you go beauty, truth, goodness, you know, that takes you down to this fourth one here of faith in God, who is love. Yeah. See, so it is that Father who is love that primes it. Yeah. So you spend some more time, you know, thinking about the chart anew now, and see if you can appreciate a little bit better why those two are there. All right. So, I don't think we need really any intro. We're now ready to jump into we've dealt with all of the three different flavors of Supernafim. Primary, secondary, tertiary. So now we're ready to deal with the angels that are outside of the central universe at that first notch down at the super universe level. This is the Conifin.
Paper 28, Ministering Spirits of the Super Universe, verses. As the Supernaphim are the angelic hosts of the central universe, and the seraphim of the local universes, so are the Seconophim, the ministering spirits of the super universes. In degree of divinity and in potential of supremacy, however, these children of the reflective spirits are much more like Supernaphim than seraphim. They serve not alone in the super creations, and both numerous and intriguing are the transactions sponsored by their unrevealed associates.
Okay. Two things. One, I mean, hopefully, I mean, the degree of divinity. Okay, yeah. So in other words, all the issues that you can have with seraphim and rebellion, they're pointing out, you know, the Seconophim are way up there at a high integris level. And then that last little tease, okay? They're unrevealed, okay, but they're not undisclosed. They just disclosed them. Okay, remember the difference between disclosure and revelation. You disclose facts, you reveal truth. Okay, they're not allowed to reveal the truth of this other order of angels. Okay, but they just disclose the fact of their existence. And can you guess who they are? Okay, we're in this ministering spirits of the super universes. We've talked about this quite a lot in recent times. You know, once you lay out the psychic circles in the sevenfold and you put the mothers, cosmic mothers, in the chart, you know, we immediately recognized, okay, immediately here at the individual super universe level, we're going to be talking about the daughters of the reflective mother spirits. The reflective mother spirits here, the mothers at the individual super universe level. But in terms of the super universes, there's another set of mothers, the creative mother agencies of the ancients of days, which are unrevealed but not undisclosed. They disclose their existence. They just disclose the existence of their daughters. Okay? There's two mothers. One at the individual superuniverse level, the reflective mother spirits, and one at the collective superuniverse level, because they're the creative mother agencies of the ancients of days, remember, that are uniform all the way around. That's the collective superuniverse level. Yeah. So, in the same mode of not talking about the reflective mother agencies, because they're about, you know, the mother womb that you're in post-ascension, and the revelation is only about the ascension scheme, by and large, not post-ascension. So they can't reveal those mothers or their daughters, but they can disclose their existence. They have to, otherwise you couldn't put together a logical picture. Yeah. So that's who they're referring to there. That other set of mothers have a coordinate set of daughters that work with the Seconophim, and that's all unrevealed in here. Okay. They do reveal a little bit about one of the offspring tied to the order of offspring tied to the creative mother agencies, but that we'll get to that in a little while. but by and large, see, they just have statements like this. So just put the piece, that's obviously what they're talking about. They serve not alone, because you've got both of those sets of mothers. All right.
As presented in these narratives, the ministering spirits of the super universes embrace the following three orders. One, the Seconophim; two, the Tertiophim; and three, the Omniophim. Since the latter two orders are not so directly concerned with the ascendant scheme of moral progression, they will be briefly discussed prior to the more extended consideration of Seconophim. Technically, neither Tertiophim nor Omniophim are ministering spirits of the super universes, though both serve as spirits in these domains.
Right. So not of, but in. And, you know, not so directly concerned, but they are indirectly, and so that's why they're in here to the degree that they are. You know, it would to leave them completely unrevealed would leave a significant hole, not in sort of the whole picture like I was just talking about, but, you know, it's merely in the ascension scheme. You couldn't talk about things like you're about to see about the tertiary femme. You couldn't talk about the origin of Nebadon and stuff, you know, in any reasonable fashion without talking, you know, bringing them up. So, all right.
One, the tertiary femme. These high angels are of record on the super universe headquarters, and despite service in the local creations, technically they are residents of these super universe capitals, inasmuch as they are not native to the local universes. Tertiary femme are children of the infinite spirit and are personalized on paradise in groups of 1,000. These supernal beings of divine originality and near supreme versatility are the gift of the infinite spirit to the creator sons of God. Oh, how cool. When a Michael son is detached from the parental regime of paradise and is made ready to go forth on the universe adventure of space, the infinite spirit is delivered of a group of 1,000 of these companion spirits. And these majestic tertiary femme accompany this creator son when he embarks upon the adventure of universe organization.
Okay. So just note, I mean, pretty mothered language there, delivered of, you know, definitely talking about mother daughters. You know, and, you know, you're reminded, like, well, tertiary femme, they must be, well, no, they're direct offspring of just the infinite spirit. So they're very high facts. The fact that they're tertiary femme is just because they're designed to engage the creator's sons, you know, that are going way down to the local universe level. So that's what's giving them the tertiary-ness, see? Okay. It's not the lowliness, if you will, of their origin, but the extreme reach of their assignment, you know, downward. And just, you know, to remind yourself, so put it, you know, in our context, they talk about this with Nebadon. You remember when they're talking about the formation, at least of the part of Nebadon that our sun came from, the Andromeda Nebula. They get to the point of 300 billion years ago, and they say, you know, in that ballpark, that's when Michael and the creative spirit and these tertiary of him came out and took residence on the newly constructed Salvington headquarters. And, you know, upwards of, not upwards, it's on the order of, let's say, on the order of 100 billion years later, you had the first inhabited worlds 200 billion years ago. So, you know, that's, you can see that, I mean, the fact that they want to explain to you in that context that Michael, since he can't leave Salvington, you know, he logically is going to have some assistance. They need to, you know, explain who those assistants are. So, I mean, that's the indirect reason why they're revealed here. It's just, but then, you know, on very short order, when you have the primary eruption and you start to have local universe angels, you start to have seraphim, then you'll see what happens here.
Throughout the early times of universe building, these 1,000 tertiary femme are the only personal staff of a creator son. They acquire a mighty experience as sun assistants during these stirring ages of universe assembling and other astronomical manipulations. They serve by the side of the creator son until the day of the personalization of the bright morning star, the firstborn of the local universe. Thereupon, the formal resignations of the tertiary femme are tendered and accepted. And with the appearance of the initial orders of native angelic life, they retire from active service in the local universe and become the liaison ministers between the creator son and of former attachment and the ancients of days of the super universe concern.
All right, see, so that, see, it's in that mode, you know, that why we're reading about them at the super universe level. Because there's, in relative terms, there's just this brief time when they're down low.
Not that brief.
You know, yeah, in relative terms, like, you know, relative to hundreds of trillions of years. And then after that, you know, they're really the linkage up to the super universe level. So that's why, not even though they're not technically residents of the super universe capitals, you know, et cetera, like they were saying. But that's why they're being presented here. Okay, so that's all you get. And you wonder just how much more they could have said.
They're talking about the personalization of the bright morning star.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first time I've ever heard that. He gets personalized?
Well, he's a person. You better get personalized at some point.
What's the mechanism?
Well, I mean, the Creator Son and the Creative Mother Spirit give birth to the actuality, to the self that is Gabriel.
Right.
And the Father personalizes that self, just like you came into
the
world.
Okay, so he gets the personality.
Right.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. It's very much a definitive father mode, like we've talked about. I mean, just like these tertiafim, when the local universe gets settled in light and life, Gabriel is really going to work for the Ancients of Days at that point. So he's joining this sort of linkage that we're talking about here, you know, really being more directly tied to the Ancients of Days and the super universe order of administration.
Yeah, they say in some other part that they got to leave some things out because they want you to think about it.
Right.
Use your imagination, conjecture.
Yeah, and just, I mean, these are likely to be extremely, amazingly profound and fascinating beings. I mean, they're very high beings. They obviously are, you know, as offspring of the infinite spirit, because they're working with the Creator Sons during that physical era, see, they must have a lot of the the power side of the third source and center in their nature, you know, as opposed to just more of the personality side. So they're probably very amazing beings, personal and yet incredible, you know, manifestations of power that you can walk up to and engage. So I'm sure it'll be very interesting when we get to actually meet them. But here we just get this little snippet, and on they go to the next thing.
Two, the Omniafim. Omniafim are created by the Infinite Spirit in liaison with the seven supreme executives. And they are the exclusive servants and messengers of these same supreme executives. Omniafim are of grand universe assignment, and in Orvinton, their corps maintains headquarters in the northerly parts of Uversa, where they reside as a special courtesy colony. They are not of registry on Uversa, nor are they attached to our administration. Neither are they directly concerned with the ascendant scheme of mortal progression. The Omniafim are wholly occupied with the oversight of the super universes in the interests of administrative coordination from the viewpoint of the seven supreme executives. Our colony of Omniafim on Uversa receives instructions from and makes reports to only the supreme executive of Arvinton, situated on conjoint executive sphere number 7 in the outer ring of Paradise satellites.
Okay, just a little snippet. But all kinds of fun little things if you look closely. That last little bit, don't let that throw you. In thinking that you just have seven distinct groups of Omniafin. You know, remember what they told you at the beginning, that they are of grand universe assignment. Okay. And why? Why are they not of individual super universe assignment? Why are they at this collective super universe level? That's what they mean by that statement. Well, you notice they say they're created by the Infinite Spirit in liaison with the seven supreme executives, not with each of the seven, you know, but with all seven together. So they're transcendent of any one local unit or one super universe, just by nature, by how they came into being, that there's this liaison of the eight beings, the infinite spirit and the seven supreme executives. It gives rise to them. That immediately is giving shades of, like when we talked about, when you aren't dealing with the master spirits individually, but when you're dealing with the collective, the super additive consequence of the relationship amongst the seven, that eighth fact, the sevenfold spirit, and it's related to the collective super universe level again. See, so you can imagine the Omnifim probably have a lot to do with those other angels that they aren't talking about, that they mentioned up in the beginning, you know, the ones that are coming from the Creative Mother agencies and are really more about the collective super universe level and about you as a finaliter. So one of the things that the relevance of the Omnifem, you can put together there, is you're probably going to have a lot to do with them as a finaliter when you're more in that collective super universe mode. You know, you're going to all the super universes. You're not isolated to one.
Okay. Well, they serve and they're messengers of the supreme executive. So as you say, they're probably interchangeable.
Right. They get assigned and, you know, everything. When they say, where did they do that? Neither are they directly concerned with the ascendant scheme of mortal progression. They're very much, they may be assigned to a given super universe, but they're not of the things that are really isolated to that super universe, its particular ascension scheme, say.
They only get instructions and report to Supreme Executive.
Right. When they're working in a given super universe, obviously they're, you know, working under a particular Supreme Executive. But, like you were saying, they're going to be obviously going to other super universes. So they're a cross-fertilization phenomenon. We talked about how sometimes they say, well, this is never allowed because it would short-circuit, like we often talk about. But here, see, they're revealing to you, here's an example of how God has set up a phenomenon that can exist without short-circuiting things. But the very fact that they have so little relationship to the ascension schemes is probably why, see, they don't short-circuit. They're really functioning, by and large, above that, so they don't short-circuit the sevenfold ascension scheme or, you know, any of the other sevenfold six schemes that are going on. Okay, so then the other one little thing I wanted to mention there, because you've got a pair here. Tertiafim, Omnifim. Okay, this is a pattern we've talked about a lot. Matter of fact, we just were reminded of it when they mentioned the Bright and Morning Star, who's the other son besides Gabriel, the father of Melchizedek. So, and remember, we talked about that not too long ago about how you have the first son Gabriel is more creator son-like, and the second son, Father Melchizedek, is more creative mother spirit-like. There's that direction, place, et cetera. And we talked about how they were tied to the Ancients of Days and the supreme executives when the local universe is settled in light and life, you know, that, you know, respectively like that. See, we're seeing a similar thing here. So you have the ones that are tied to the Ancients of Days and the ones that are tied to the supreme executives. You have the ones that are tied more to the direction or the father-like side, the super fathers, the Ancients of Days, and the ones that are tied to the more place-like or mother-like side, the seven supreme executives. You know, when they were talking about especially the assigned sentinels, and they kept using the word coordinate. Notice they did it here again. Administrative coordination, see, from the viewpoint of the seven supreme executives. And up there when they were talking about that, they mentioned the Omnifim. Yeah. That they're part of that, that more place-like or mother-like or whatever, you know, depending on the context, what word you want to use, that two, the other side of that twofold nature. that is the administration of things. So just another pair like that that we saw before. All right. Okay, now to the main thing.
The Sekhanafim. The seraphic hosts are produced by the seven reflective spirits assigned to the headquarters of each superuniverse. There is a definite paradise responsive technique associated with creation of these angels in groups of seven. In each seven, there are always one primary, three secondary, and three tertiary Sekhanafim. They always personalize in this exact proportion. When seven such Sekhanafim are created, one, the primary, becomes attached to the service of the Ancients of Days. The three secondary angels are associated with three groups of Paradise Origin administrators in the supergovernment: the Divine Counselors, the Perfectors of Wisdom, and the Universal Censors. The three tertiary angels are attached to the Ascendant Trinity, Trinitized Associates of the Superuniverse Rulers, the Mighty Messengers, those high in authority, and those without name and number.
Okay, so we talked about all them, so they line up there. The one thing to note is the pattern that they're pointing out that immediately comes out, and they refer to it as a definite paradise responsive technique. Okay, why paradise responsive? Who's on paradise that's supplying a pattern here? The seven master spirits of paradise. Okay. And notice, okay, we're talking about daughters of mothers, the reflective mother spirits. We're talking about daughters of mothers. So we're a mother's mind. You know, we've been talking about how the mind, the adaptability they keep bringing up with the angels, high and low. When we engage mind initially, it has seven adjutants, seven facets to it. Again, if you look on the chart when I laid them out, you know, when I put those seven adjutants on the chart, there's one set of three, one, two, three adjutants, the second set of three, four, five, six, and then seven by itself. It's two sets of three and one by itself. Two sets of three and one by itself. Mind, mother, you know, mothers are wombs of mind. These are daughters of the mother. You see, it's the same pattern. Same pattern that, you know, produces the seven, the differentials amongst the seven adjutants, produces the differentials among the Sekhanafim here. So they come in three and three and one. Because with the master spirits, you have three that are just a single, three that are double, and one that's a triple. Okay, in terms of Father, Son, Spirit.
It's also the same functional levels of personality, come to think of it.
Right. There's all these. Okay, so that's that pattern again. And that's important, they're pointing out, because they're just about, you know, we're going to go to the next section on the primary Sekhanafim, and if you flip, you go, oh, there's a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 here. You know, immediately, you know, you remember how this works. If we go through the Sekhanafim, there's seven different flavors of each. There's two different sevens in play, just like in the pattern universe, the central universe. You have the pattern of seven that goes around, and the pattern that's orthogonal to that, independent of that, and it's radial. You have the seven worlds, say, of the spirit is one sevenfold pattern. The seven circuits of Havona is a different, independent, orthogonal sevenfold pattern. You have the sevenfold that's tied to the infinite spirit and the sevenfold that's tied to the Paradise Trinity. Remember, everything we've been reading about for a long time now, that fundamental coupling, hammer meets anvil even, you know, of the infinite spirit and the Paradise Trinity. This is all about everything that we experience is coming into existence where the infinite spirit meets the Paradise Trinity. And so you often, you often have these two sevenfold patterns that are coming from the two sides coming together. One from the infinite spirit, seven master spirit side, and the other from the Paradise Trinity side. And the Paradise Trinity side can produce all kinds of different sevenfold patterns. Whereas the master spirits, I mean, there's just seven master spirits. That's just a pretty, you know, straightforward, direct pattern that just keeps getting applied. But, you know, think about the circuits of Avona. Is there just one world in each circuit? So there's just one sevenfold, you know, no. How many different sevens could you dot to dot in Avona? You know, you could take this world in the seventh circuit, connect it to this world in the sixth, and then you could do it this way, and you could do it. There's a lot of different ways. Okay, you can establish a sevenfold pattern within the Trinity, Paradise Trinity. And so, for instance, when we, you know, when we go through these three groups of Sakanafim, we have three different sevenfold patterns for their subsets from coming from the Trinity side. But they're all just, you know, one pattern coming from the Master, you know, the infinite spirit side, that seven master spirit pattern.
Right, it'd be a billion divided by seven.
I mean, it's just, yeah. See, you know, no wonder there's so many sevens, okay, in the book when you start thinking about it like that. How many different ways can I, you know, draw a cross section through Avona and get a sevenfold pattern?
And okay.
Look at it
from the top down, it looks like a snowflake.
Okay, so that's what we're doing. So that's the one side. That's the infinite spirit side, and then they just proceed, you know, one at a time to go through and give you the sevenfold patterns that are coming from the Paradise Trinity side for the primary and the secondary and the tertiary, Sakanafim. All right.
So these Sakanafim of the super universes are the offspring of the reflective spirits, and therefore reflectivity is inherent in their nature. They are reflectively responsive to all of the H phase of every creature of origin in the third source and center and the Paradise Creator Sons. They are not directly reflective of the beings and entities, personal or otherwise, of soul origin in the first source and center. We possess many evidences of the actuality of the universe intelligence circuits of the Infinite Spirit, but even if we had no other proof, the reflective performances of the Sakanafim would be quite sufficient to demonstrate the reality of the universal presence of the infinite mind of the conjoint actor.
In other words, indeed, there is an all-encompassing mind, an infinite mind through an infinite spirit, through an absolute mind, the conjoint actor, and encompassing everything. Now, the one thing there, you know, you could ask why, a very straightforward why question. They just tell you, it's like, well, should I just believe that they are reflective, responsive to all of each phase of every creature of origin in the third source and center in the Paradise Creator Sons, but not the first source and center? Or can I understand why? You know, again, we're talking about daughters of a mother. Okay? The infinite mother spirit and the eternal mother son, those two existential persons are not purely existential. They have mother deity bonded to their existential core. Through experience in Havona, the eternal son became the eternal mother son, and the infinite spirit became the infinite mother spirit. Okay, and but the father, no. The father's purely existential. No direct linkage to the mother. So that's why.
Yeah. Say that again. Through what they became the infinite mother spirit? And
that through experience. I mean, experience. You know, mother deity is experiential deity, so the only way for them to have acquired that is via experience. You can't just exist existentially. So yeah, they experienced in the central universe, in a very transcendent way that no one understands, but they talk about it, you know, up there, and they talk about the eternal Son and the infinite Spirit. That experience in the central universe that added mother deity to their existential deity nature. You know, like in the case of the eternal Son, you have Son type deity, and you had mother deity to that. So it becomes mother son deity.
So it talks here about they are reflective of every creature of origin in the third source center of paradise creator. Would that be us? In a way?
Right. I mean, especially when you recognize, as we've been talking about here, you know, for the last several months, mm-hmm. when you start to appreciate that most fundamentally we are Trinity origin beings. We are of the Mother. We didn't come from the paradise. We've come together in almost magical fashion out of the hole and are rising up. We are in the womb. Not on paradise outside.
Like an ascender in the bottom-up sense would have to be a Trinity origin phenomenon.
All right, so, as we're about to read, when we get to the to some of the Sakanafim, they know you very well. they're very much attuned to you. Again, just further recognition of, any sort of silly thought that you somehow are just this pure father thing, and hence the angels can't know you or anything. You've got this wonderful little secret space that you hide in. No. You're wide open in the womb, and all of the mother's daughters can see you like an open book. Okay?
The question is, what do you see?
No fig leaf is going to prevent this from happening.
The primary Sakanafim.
The primary Sakanafim of assignment to the ancients and days are living mirrors in the service of these triune rulers. Think what it means in the economy of a super universe to be able to turn, as it were, to a living mirror, and therein to see and therewith to hear the certain responses of another being 1,000 or 100,000 light years distant, and to do all this instantly and unerringly. Records are essential to the conduct of the universes. Broadcasts are serviceable. The work of the solitary and other messengers is very helpful. But the ancients of days, from their position midway between the inhabited worlds and paradise, between man and God, can instantly look both ways, hear both ways, and know both ways.
Okay, so this remember we talked about the solitary messengers, the big point they were making is that, they're persons and they can go essentially instantaneously, from point A to point B, and it's very important to have that personal linkage. The ancients of days have a special, thing of their own here, to overcome the impersonal aspect of even the reflectivity surface. They have what we're about to read about. These reflective angels who are very personal and yet are like nuggets of the reflectivity service. Their selves are very mysteriously one with that. And so there's this timeless knowing that they are of, and yet they're a person that can be approached. And you notice they say, but the ancients of days have. Okay, so solitary messengers aren't going to be that important for the ancients of days. They're very important for everyone else, but the ancients of days have this very special way to get personal information that you can't get otherwise, even through the reflectivity service.
So, question. Mm-hmm. So, during the Lucifer Rebellion, the ancients of days were, maybe through this service, were pretty much being kept abreast moment to moment of what was happening. When they isolated the local universe, I think that
not
local,
the
hurt their
local
service
system.
At all? Yeah. I think that hurt their service at all?
Mm.
No.
Okay. See, again,
other people were
they said broadcasts are serviceable. I mean, this is transcendent of all that. See? I mean, any sort of circuits being cut off, it's independent. That's what I'm saying. when they cut off the circuits, that's just the normal, you know, linear circuits, the network. That doesn't affect reflectivity. And it also is not going to affect this mysterious sort of super additive thing on top of that reflectivity mechanism.
Yeah, they're outside the quarantine. We're inside the quarantine. They don't need to be quarantined.
Yeah, and you remember, you know, all is not well in the mind of Lucifer. Some words to that effect, you know. I mean, we're about to read about that sort of, you know, intelligence, you know, how everyone's mind is an open book from on high here. They see, they know everything that's going on in every being's mind.
This ability to hear and see, as it were, all things can be perfectly realized in the super universes only by the Ancients of Days and only on their respective headquarter worlds. Even their limits are encountered. From Reversa, such communication is limited to the worlds and universes of Orvantan. And while inoperative between the super universes, this same reflective technique keeps each one of them in close touch with the central universe and with paradise. The seven super governments, though individually segregated, are thus perfectly reflective of the authority above and are wholly sympathetic as well as perfectly conversant with the needs below.
One of the key things there, you know, at the beginning, see, they really stressed everyone else needs the solitary messengers. They've got this. But then, you know, we were just talking about, like when we were talking about the Omnifin, fundamentally, the Ancients of Days, remember, their selves are identical. There is no sevenfold individuation of their selves. All 21 are identical selves. And their natural state is transcendent of the borders, the stark borders that divide the seven super universes. So when they go out to head a super universe, they're going into a box. It's not unlike when they talk about the adjusters being imprisoned in your mind. There's an imprisonment that they've adopted, that they've put themselves in cooperative subordination to. Okay? But here's this mechanism that we're about to read about gives them a little bit of liberty above that. I mean, they, you know, it still doesn't go directly, you know, around, but there's an in and out, you know, or linkage from one to the other from the inside, you know, that they have through this that helps to make them a little able to live a little bit more in their natural state of being transcendent of the borders, to really be part of that collective super universe level. See, so again, that reminds you, oh, and it's because they aren't totally isolated that their coordinates, those creative mother agencies, the Ancients of Days, that are the mother womb of mind for the collective super universe levels, they can be that. They couldn't be that if somehow they were totally locked in to a super universe. So this is a little shades of part of that, you know, what goes beyond the immediacy of the revelation that you can begin to see between the lines. Yeah. So, yep.
Do the ancients have personalities?
Absolutely.
They say they're all the same.
Their selves are identical. Their 21 personalities are absolutely unique. The seven master spirits, their seven personalities are absolutely unique. And their seven selves are different. There's seven, you know, from our perspective, we think of a mindal self, and a personality is identified with that. There, not only do they have a mindal self, but that self is deity. The master spirits have seven flavors of deity, different flavors. The 21 Ancients of Days have one flavor of deity. It's all the same. Okay.
It's all like deity nature.
So the primary Sakonophim are found to incline by inherent nature towards seven types of service. And it is befitting that the first serials of this order should be so endowed as inherently to interpret the mind of the spirit of the Ancients of Days.
Okay, before you read that, or they really explain that.
The Ancient of Days.
Yeah, spirit to the Ancients of Days, yeah.
Okay.
One of the things we haven't mentioned yet is this whole, I keep saying they're the daughters of a mother. It's like, but wait a minute, they said that there's, they reminded us that there's seven reflective spirits. Remember, we talked about this before. Yes, you have seven reflective spirits, if you just say reflective spirits, but there's one mother. You have seven, individuations of the spirit type deity, but you have one mother type deity that bonds them all together. So you have seven reflective spirits, but one really reflective mother spirit. I mean, you say the reflective mother spirit, but technically, in terms of functioning as a mother, there's this one fact, one mother giving birth to daughters. The reflective mother spirits have this, that complexity compared to the creative mother spirit, where it's just one individual and you have the spirit and the mother deity and on. It's very more straightforward to understand. Okay. But they, and here, so that when you just say reflective spirits, you're focusing on how all the angels are children of the infinite spirit. We're reading about spirit origin beings here. But don't forget, there's this mother deity, which stems from the Paradise Trinity, not the spirit. Okay, that brings the Trinity into play. And that's what we're talking about here. Now, so even when you take just one of the three different flavors that come from the sevenfold of the Master Spirits, the primary Sakanafim, you're still going to have, when the Trinity engages that, a sevenfoldness we're about to read about that comes from the mother side, the Trinity side, of their origin.
So okay. Which spirit is it that it interprets?
That's number one. We're just about to read that. There's
interpret the mind of the spirit to the Ancients of Days.
Right. See, we're about to the voice of the conjoined actor.
Oh. Okay.
The infinite spirit. All right.
One, the voice of the conjoined actor. In each super universe, the first primary Sakanafim and every seventh one of that order subsequently created exhibit a high order of adaptability for understanding and interpreting the mind of the infinite spirit to the Ancients of Days and their associates in the super governments. This is of great value on the headquarters of the super universe, for unlike the local creations of their divine ministers, the seat of a super government does not have a specialized personalization of the infinite spirit. Hence, these seraphic voices come the nearest to being the personal representatives of the third source and center on such a capital sphere. True, the seven reflective spirits are there, but these mothers of the seraphic hosts are less truly and automatically reflective of the conjoined actor than of the seven master spirits.
All right. See, so you see that, you've got seven different flavors of reflective spirits. So, you've got each of the seven master spirits sort of directly voiced there. But what about, the infinite spirit above? So that's what this is about. And remember, they're very personal, like we were just saying. It's not just, giving, that impersonal nature of the infinite spirit, directly, literally, when you just say the infinite spirit, that impersonal fact of the third source and center. But it's the personalization of that. See, and that's that's the way they state it there. You have adaptability again, like we said, because of mind. for the understanding and interpreting the mind of the infinite spirit. See, so they say infinite spirit, right? But you have a person doing that infinite spirit. So it's a personalization, effectively, of the infinite spirit made small. See. You have the personalization that you call the conjoined actor. These are little, mini expressions of the personalization is the conjoint actor, these personal angels. Okay, so now you have the infinite spirit and the seven master spirits individually, but what about the seven master spirits collectively? Okay.
We're going through what their functions are, but as specified in the breakout in this paragraph on page 307, where it says one is always attached to the service of the Ancients of Days, three, so that's what we're going through.
We're doing one.
Yeah, that was one. But
We're just looking at the primary Sakonophim, the one that's attached to the Ancients of Days out of the seven.
Right, I know.
The primary.
And the next three are going to be those.
No. These seven that we're about to read are all primary Sakonophim. They're all the ones that are attached to the Ancients of Days directly. Like they said, these are these special personal messengers. Information bestowers that the Ancients of Days have, like everyone else has the solitary messengers. These seven are all
voices.
Just the ones that are attached to the Ancients of Days.
Well, but it says in each seven, there's always one primary, three secondary, and three tertiary.
Remember, there's two different sevens, remember? Like we said up front. Okay? Okay, if you look, you know, we have the section on the primary Sakonophim, then you have the secondary Sakonophim, and then the tertiary. You have three secondaries, three tertiaries, one primary. There's the seven. But in each of those three groups that seven got broken into, there's seven.
Did you break this out in the chart, Chris?
Right? You have seven different flavors of the one, seven different flavors of the three, and seven different flavors of the other three.
I'll have to study it at home because I didn't get that.
Okay, just one. Put one and three and three. So there's your seven: primary, secondary, tertiary. And now below that, put 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Seven different flavors of the one. Seven different flavors
of
the
three. Kinds of primary.
See?
And they're
all attached to the Ancients of Days. And then there's seven flavors of the secondary, and they're all attached to the Divine Counselors, the Perfectors of Wisdom. Okay. Okay. And then there's seven of the tertiary, and they're all attached to the Mighty Messengers and those high, et cetera. Okay. All right. So number two of the primary.
I guess
flavor.
Your confusion is that there's more tertiary than there are primary and secondary. So
well, but remember,
there's seven flavors. There's still.
I mean, who knows how many primaries. I mean, there's endless numbers of primaries, and there's endless numbers of these number one type of primaries, and endless numbers of these number two type of primaries. I mean, we're making lots and lots and lots of angels. It's just that they've broken up into categories. That's just one of these voice, it's not just the voice of the conjoint. There's a whole flavor that are the voice of the conjoint actor. And that's one of the things they don't really help you to understand is about the multiplicity of it. Probably, like I was saying, the conjoint actor, that one person, that's a big personal fact. Probably you need a whole bunch of Sakonophim to express different aspects of that one big personal fact. Be my first guess. All right.
So two, the voice of the seven master spirits. The second primary Sakonophim, and every seventh one thereafter created, inclined towards portraying the collective natures and reactions of the seven master spirits. Though each master spirit is already represented on a super universe capital by some one of the seven reflective spirits of assignment, such representation is individual, not collective. Collectively, they are only reflectively present. They are only reflectively present. Therefore, do the master spirits welcome the services of these highly personal angels, the second serials of the primary Sakonophim, who are so competent to represent them before the Ancients of Days.
Okay. So again, this is about that the sevenfold spirit. You know, not God the sevenfold, you know, but remember that eighth fact when you're talking about the seven master spirits. You have eight individuals, you have seven individual master spirits, and you have an eighth individuality, the sevenfold spirit. Just like you have the three infinite persons, and then you have the paradise trinity as a fourth, you know, individuality. Okay, so when you're in the central universe, you have a more immediate presence of the sevenfold spirit as a spirit fact. And then they're pointing out, you reciprocate that out into the super universes reflectively. They literally said that. They are only reflectively present here. Okay, there's a reflectively present presence of the sevenfold spirit out here. But definitely, see, now, nothing, it's very tenuous. It certainly is not anything that has an immediate personal definitive character. So these Sekhanafim are like little personalizations of the sevenfold spirit. And that's an interesting point, because unlike the previous one, it's like, okay, well, if those Sekhanafim are like little personalizations of the infinite spirit, but we know about the personalization, the conjoint actor. Well, we don't know about the personalization of the sevenfold spirit. What is that? See, that probably has something to do with the next universe age, because remember we talked about that's supreme ultimate deity and very transcendent. So that's the kind of voice that they are giving is very intriguing. Some kind of personalization that's not even revealed here in the revelation. Some future personalization that's more directly tied to the sevenfold spirit. In just a few words, they're actually invoking some giant question marks there. But now you have it. All those question marks aside, you have all the different bases covered. You have the individual, all seven master spirits. You have the collective seven master spirits. And you have the infinite spirit. So now you have all those voices available to the Ancients of Days as personal voices, not just selves, not just deity, but personalized deity voices.
A lot of people talking.
Yeah, the Ancients of Days, Yeah, the more you think about what we're going to read here, the more you begin to appreciate just how vast an Ancient of Days is. Okay, I mean, okay. Yeah.
The Infinite Spirit must have had something to do with the creation or training of the Paradise Sons of the Order of Michael. For the third primary Sekhanafim and every seventh serial thereafter possessed the remarkable gift of being reflective of the minds of these creator sons. If the Ancients of Days would like to know, really know, the attitude of Michael of Nebadon regarding some matter under consideration, they do not have to call him on the lines of space. They can go on their iPad. They need only call for the chief of Nebadon voices, who, upon request, will present the Michael Sekhanafim of record. And right then and there, the Ancients of Days will perceive the voice of the Master Son of Nebadon.
Okay, just stop right there. See, notice how they're giving you a little bit of clues about the multiplicity there. See, there's a chief of Nebadon voices.
Right.
Okay, so, like I said, I mean, apparently you have, you're getting the particular one that is a personal expression that you're looking for. That first line, the infinite spirit must have had something to do with the creation or training of the Paradise Sons. They mention up when they're talking about that experience in the central universe that I was talking about that the Eternal Son and the Infinite Spirit had that acquired their experiential, you know, through which they acquired an experiential deity nature. They point out that the relationship of the infinite spirit to that is, I mean, the eternal Son's relationship to that is mysterious enough. It's even more mysterious how the infinite spirit was involved, and that's what the, you know, they're being very, they're always very conservative, you know, and
right. Supposed to be the Father and the Son.
I mean, on the one hand, it's like you know that the infinite spirit had a relationship because they both acquired experiential deity. Okay, but they don't know any of the details. So, you know,
they this, say or training, because it may not be the
creation. Right. So that whole bit of the relationship of the Creator Sons, you know, which starts with the firstborn Creator Son, that first Michael, you know, and getting his experience in the central universe. Right, they're just saying, even though they don't understand all the details of that, apparently we're dealing with that linkage. Okay, so that's what that's about.
So these guys, are they, so the chief of Nebuna Voices is Anyaversa?
Yeah, see, these are all right there with the Ancients of Days, Anyaversa.
So the voice who represents Michael of Nebadon is also Anyaversa.
Well, see, and that's the thing. I mean, chief of Nebadon Voices, there's several of them that represent Michael of Nebadon, see? So the Zekanathan of record relative to that specific issue that the Ancients of Days wants to talk to Michael about, one of these can talk to Michael with that. Another one needs to be used to speak for Michael on another issue. That's apparently, see, what's, like I'm saying, is going on here.
But are those particular angels also on your versa?
Yeah, they're all there.
They're not on the numbers on Nebuchadnezzar.
Right. And they're all on your versa, and they just suck it right out of Michael's mind.
Yeah.
Okay, from afar.
He's not the private
going
on about his mind.
Right, he's an open book.
What about when he says, don't tell anybody?
There's a loudspeaker on your versa that says that, okay? I mean, don't tell anyone in the super universe.
He must have said that to his boss.
No other order of sonship is thus reflectable, and no other order of angel can thus function. We do not fully understand just how this is accomplished, and I doubt very much that the Creator Sons themselves fully understand it. But of a certainty, we know it works, and that it unfailingly works acceptably, we also know. For in all the history of Uversa, the seraphic voices have never erred in their presentations.
Just one little quick thing. I mean, remember, this is all tied to this connection via mother deity that a Creator Son has to the reflective mother spirits. When you talk about a spirit-fused, mortal sender, remember that fragment of spirit substance is a fragment of the reflective mother spirit's substance that reflects a particular Creator Son's, you know, nature. You know, he can't individuate himself. He can't break off a chunk of himself, you know, to fuse with this ascender. But one of the next mother up, you know, just like the spirit fused mortals, is the creative mother spirit. The next mothers up, the reflective mother spirits, you know, individuate some of their nature that's exactly reflective of him, and that fuses with that sun fused mortal. That and also the spirit of truth, remember, continues on outside of the local universe because it can modulate upon the spirit substrate of the reflective mother spirits equally to the way it's poured out upon the spirit substrate of the creative mother spirit within the local universe. It's all the same thing. This very tight linkage via mother deity, because he's a Creator Son is a child of the reflective or of the eternal mother son. So that's what's going on with all that.
And here's another example of not being able to explain the facts, but knowing the truth.
Right, and they always remember, they always say this. You can't see the mechanics of this mother linkage stuff. It's not open. It's not out there as objective knowledge that you can examine. It's behind the scenes, and so we've talked about this many times. Whenever they talk about these mother phenomena or Trinity, origin phenomena, they always speak of it like this because they can't see the mechanics. It's almost like magic to them. It just coalesces out of the whole. You know, you can't. It's not a bunch of parts that you can see linking together and doing things, and you can analyze it. You know, it's this very inscrutable, holistic phenomenon of Mother Deity.
If the Creator's sons themselves don't fully understand this, how do they ever have a private moment or a private thought?
They don't.
They don't need it.
They don't expect to.
And you shouldn't expect to either.
Yeah.
Because you don't have any private moments or thoughts. They're all stand. They're all these angels.
It's relative. I mean, if you can have a private moment or thought in relative to you. In other words, you know, and to certain people, but as far as relative to this is concerned, it's the same as you not having a private thought relative to the angels that can read your thoughts.
Right. You can have private. Right.
Has a great career for eternity. Trying to get rid of surveillance.
There's good luck. See what he's saying. I mean, see, there's a privacy in the flatland, you know, in the plane. You know, they can have a linkage like this that no one can see from horizontally, but from above you can see it clearly. I mean, because you know, you put walls like this, no one can see you, but there's no ceiling.
Yeah.
Okay, so everyone can look in the top. I mean, it's just like on the architectural spheres. There's no roofs. There's walls, so that in the plane you're private.
And
from above.
It's the only way that there can be a whole.
Right.
If there was a whole lot of privacy amongst all the parts, there would never be a whole.
Right. And we've talked about that. See, even when you say a personal private moment, it's like, well, doesn't the absoluteness of my personality allow me to establish something that's absolutely private? Yeah, absolutely private. But guess what? Mother Deity goes above that. Yeah. It goes super absolute. I mean, we're talking about the infinite spirit, which is has co-infinite, the co-infinite upholder. Remember, it has all the ability to go above the absoluteness of the Father's personality circuit. This distinction is vital. Right? And that's how everyone is connected through the individuality hall, because even though you're an absolute personality, there's a super absolute fact that can link you together still. And hence, there's no ceiling even in absoluteness. It's still just a wall, not a ceiling.
But though there are secrets, I mean, you can't land on with anything.
But the spirit fusers, they're fusing with a fragment of the reflective mother? Is it still called a fragment?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Spirit fragment, yeah.
So you are here beginning to see something of the manner in which divinity encompasses the space of time and masters the time of space. It was another one of those.
The encompasses and masters, think about that.
You are here obtaining one of your first fleeting glimpses of the technique of the eternity cycle, divergent for the moment to assist the children of time in their tasks of mastering the difficult handicaps of space. And these phenomena are additional to the established universe technique of the reflective spirits.
Like I said, it's above the reflectivity, you know, just pure reflectivity mechanism. But again, reflectivity is the cosmic presence of the supreme mind. All this is about transcendent mind, and hence being able to look in through the top.
Though apparently deprived of the personal presence of the master spirits above, and of the Creator's sons below, the Ancients of Days have at their command living beings attuned to cosmic mechanisms of reflective perfection and ultimate precision, whereby they may enjoy the reflective spirit, the reflective presence of all those exalted beings whose personal presence is denied them. By and through these means, and others unknown to you, God is potentially present on the headquarters of the super universes.
Just not only the actuality, but the reality. That's the actuality, the reflective perfection, and the reality, the ultimate precision. See, I mean, if it's going to be a personal thing, you know, it has to have this ultimate, you know, transcendent personality, activity, integrity, not just supreme.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow. The Ancients of Days perfectly deduced the Father's will by equating the spirit voice flash from above and the Michael voice flashes from below. Thus may they be unerringly certain in calculating the Father's will concerning the administrative affairs of the local universes. But to deduce the will of one of the gods from a knowledge of the other two, the three Ancients of Days must act together. Two would not be able to achieve the answer. And for this reason, even were there no others, the super universes are always presided over by three Ancients of Days and not by one or even two.
And when we talked about, so you have to have you have one for individuality, two for associativity, three for the full unity. And so here, they're going to try to deduce the Father's will. So you're going to need to have the Spirit and the Son and the Trinity pinned down precisely, and then you can get the fourth, you can deduce the fourth. So you have, like they say, you have the Spirit and the Son through these Sakanafim. You have the Trinity through their nature, Ancients of Days, Trinity origin beings, in their full engagement of that fact is three. And so then they can deduce the fourth. Yeah. So we're talking about pretty high stuff. Deducing the Father's will. Not listening to it and obeying it. Deducing it from first principles. Okay. Yeah. They're gods. Remember, the Ancients of Days are God. Okay.
All right. Four, the voice of the angelic hosts. The fourth primary Sakanafim and every seventh serial proved to be angels peculiarly responsive to the sentiments of all orders of angels, including the Supernafim above and the Seraphim below. Thus, the attitude of any commanding or supervising angel is immediately available for consideration at any council of the Ancients of Days. Never a day passes on your world that the chief of Seraphim on Urantia is not made conscious of the phenomena of reflective transference, of being drawn upon from Uversa for some purpose. But unless forewarned by a solitary messenger, she remains wholly ignorant of what is sought and of how it is secured. These ministering spirits of time are constantly furnishing this sort of unconscious and certainly therefore unprejudiced testimony concerning the endless array of matters engaging the attention and counsel of the Ancients of Days and their associates.
Whoa. Drawn upon, like I said, say it more colloquially, sucked out of his mind. He has no idea it's coming, and it's, whoa, someone just, scanned me. Someone just,
Or does he even know what that happened?
Who just sucked that out of, that's what I'm saying. He knows, that he's not made conscious of the phenomenon of reflective transference. Suddenly he's aware that someone has just sucked some information out of his mind. He doesn't know what they just sucked out of his mind, but but he comes conscious of it.
So he can't put an opinion on it.
Right. Yes. See, and so that, and you notice the unprejudiced. See, again, it's just the self that's being tapped. The personality is not, allowed to get in the way. Okay, the self is tapped, and then the angel personalizes it. See, so this voice, becomes the person that engages that little measure of self that's just gotten tapped and expresses it personally, as opposed to the person, that it was tapped from. In this case, her personality expressing that selfness.
But it's only these commanding angels, right?
Well, obviously the Ancients of Days are most likely going to be only interested in what the commanders have. The commanders are taking care of the underlings. They could tap anyone. They wanted to know what your guardian angel, was thinking about something or other. They just suck it out of her mind and,
Okay,
so, wouldn't give any warning. They wouldn't say thank you or anything.
So Okay. Never a day in this world that they don't
Service. And remember, this is just, you know, what the ancients of days, you know, when we get into the other angels, then we're going to start to talk more about sucking stuff out of the people's minds in the room here.
We get robbed all the time. What are you guys so worried about?
Yeah. Yeah.
Think how much information.
Yeah, and just how oblivious are you? How sad is it to regard? I mean, the fact that we're being tapped all the time and we are clueless of that fact. When you, but see, you wonder, how far up do I have to get as I start to ascend? Well, I start to become aware, like the primary seraphim here, you know, the chief of seraphim. Like, whoa, someone just, you know, tapped me there. I wonder what they just read.
When they tap Michael, do you think they get his opinion? Or they can maybe do both, right?
Yeah, you know, see, and again, this incredibly fascinating thing about the fact that, well, Michael's personality is absolutely unique. How can some other person give it correct personality expression?
Yeah.
Okay, maybe I should just mention that right now. This, you got to remember, we talked about this when we talk about us prior to age 6, roughly. The nature of mother, you know, and the fact that she can be the individuality of the whole. The father can only relate personally to an individual, to one individual, you know, and then one other individual. And, yeah, do an infinite number of individuals at a time, but there's only one individual in the relationship, not more than one. The mother can engage personally the whole collection simultaneously, you know, in one view, not in an infinite number of views, in one view. The personality phenomenon related to mothers, and we're seeing here these daughters, has this transpersonal absolute distinction potential. There's a personality functioning that's above the absoluteness that individuates personality. So since it's above, it's like, well, I can be that person, and I can be that person, and I can be that person. You can come down from above. And so the creative mother spirit can guide you. She's a person, and she can guide you pre-age 6 as if it was your personality was already there engaged in guiding it. And when it actually does arrive, when you're encircled in the Holy Spirit, the transition is seamless. No one can tell anything changed because she perfectly, like we're just saying, ultimate precision. She has ultimate precision in this. You're not going to notice any discontinuity, okay? It'll seamlessly match up. That's what we're talking about here. What mothers can, you know, and these daughters can do. Okay?
Michael's not any more clued in than anyone.
He gets transcended just like we do in this regard.
We just trust.
So 5, broadcast receivers. There's a special class of broadcast messages which are received only by those primary supplements.
By these.
While they are not the regular broadcasters of Uversa, they work in liaison with the angels of the reflective voices for the purpose of synchronizing the reflective vision of the Ancients of Days with certain actual messages coming in over the established circuits of universe communication. Broadcast receivers are the 5th serials, the 5th primary seraphim to be created in every 7th one thereafter.
Okay. Okay, just with the one little thing there that they threw in. While they are not the regular broadcasters of Uversa. Okay, so who are the regular broadcasters at various levels? And you're talking about that whole chain of, what's the word that they use in common for all the chain of recorders, right? Mm-hmm. See, it's that chain of recorders, you know, that are the normal broadcasters. Okay, and on Uversa, we read about this just not too long ago. When you're on Uversa, what's the name of those broadcasters there? It's a celestial. Remember?
John says DJ.
Remember, we had the custodians of records on Paradise, and we had. Oh, come on, guys, flip back. All right. I'm not just going to say it. I'm going to make you flip back so you can see it. So flip back to Let's see here. Where is it? Okay, so it's in paper 25, section 6, which is 281 in the single column. Those are on Paradise, and then, who are they? You said it right, Sydney?
The Celestial Recorders.
The Celestial Recorders. Like, I gave you a clue that they're recorders.
You said that earlier.
We thought that, okay. Well, that was so obvious, we thought it must be something different.
No, Chris said it earlier.
Okay, I missed it. I missed when Chris said it. Okay. See, remember, those are the ones that are on Universa.
You said it earlier, Chris.
Well, yeah, okay.
Yeah, you've been saying about 10 times, yeah. Finally,
one of us will say it once. Okay, they are received, classified, and assigned to their spheres of work by the councils of the chiefs of records on the headquarters of the seven super universes. See? Okay. All right, so those, you know, that's who they're referring to, the regular broadcasters, okay, are the celestial recorders. But they're giving you this interesting little thing, that there's something that's in the normal grid, you know, communication grid, that isn't really directly part of that whole recorder chain of things. It's something that these angels, these aconophim, are tied to, that links that part of the grid to the Ancients of Days, or that information in the grid to the Ancients of Days in a personal, reflective way. So, you know, these other ones, you've gotten the sense that this little personal voice is kind of being pulled out of sort of the ubiquitous reflectivity thing. Here, you've got you actually have the grid in play. So there's some sort of like highest levels of the grid that it sort of interfaces with the reflectivity presence, apparently, and these angels are working in that interface domain, yeah, and keeping the Ancients of Days linked into the top levels of the grid, apparently.
What's the reflected vision of the Ancients of Days was certain?
Yes, right. They work in liaison with the angels of the reflective voices for the purpose of synchronizing the reflective vision. See, that's why I said, you know, ones we've just been reading about, this reflective vision of the Ancients of Days with certain actual messages coming over the established circuits. See, so linking their circuits to the reflectivity presence.
Oh, I took it to mean that it's almost like where the Ancients of Days look, you know, or in the holographic, they're presently, they can visualize them while they're giving their message.
They're just referring back to the ones we've just been reading about, that real reflective vision, okay? All right. So it's a very complicated, they have access to apparently everything here, see? Okay.
Transport personalities. These are the Sakonathim who carry the pilgrims of time from the headquarters worlds of the super universe to the outer circle of Avona. They are the transport core of the super universes, operating inward to paradise and outward to the worlds of their respective sectors. This core is composed of the six primary Sakonophim and every seventh one subsequently created.
Okay. See how we're going through. You know, now we're up to the sixth. One thing to note here about this whole bit, mysteriousness of the transport. Remember how that's one of the secrets and that sort of stuff. Like we were saying, we're going through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 here, this is Trinity. Remember how when we talked about divine counselors, for instance, they're Trinity origin beings, and so they can transport themselves, that relationship to the Trinity. Okay. One of these, that secret involves the mysteriousness of the linkage between the Infinite Spirit and the Paradise Trinity. And with these transport angels, you have this very definitive fact that comes from the Trinity inserted into a fact that's sort of overtly coming from the infinite spirit, this angel. And it makes these angels beings that, you know, can do like Trinity origin beings can do and can move, you know, around the universe, self-locomote. Just like we talked about, you know, when you come out as a finality, you've taken an oath to the Paradise Trinity, that fact that you have this definitive connection to the Paradise Trinity is why you don't need a transport angel anymore. You can transport yourself around. Okay, you have that relationship to the Paradise Trinity. That's what's going on. That's the mystery of this unseen linkage between the infinite spirit and the Paradise Trinity, giving them some Paradise Trinity likeness that allows them to self-locomote. You know, and they're one particular flavor that are made. You know, a voice of the angelic hosts can't serve as a transport. Okay. It's one of the seven distinct Trinity facets that's being expressed here. Okay.
Yep. Yeah, wait, we got questions. Okay. The Ancients of Days are basically the judges, right? They judge the iniquitous ones.
Well, when you think from your perspective, you know, from an ascender perspective, you think of them as the capital J judges.
Well, don't they judge?
They're also the administrators of the super universe.
Right.
Yeah.
But are they transporting the pilgrims of time who are having to go to trial, or what are
no,
they doing?
No, just like they're saying, I mean, how are you going to get to Havona? When you're on Yversa, you're done with all your education on Yversa, how do you get to Havona? These guys transport you to Havona.
Okay, because I thought they just served the Ancients of Days.
They do. They're based on the Ancients of Days headquarters. I mean, if you want to look at it in terms of serving, the Ancient of Days would like you to be transported to Havona because they've declared that you're done. You've finished what they demand of you on Yversa with your education. They want you to be transported. So they point to their servant and he transports you. Okay.
And they bring somebody back.
Right. They serve coming to and going from the Ancients of Days. So only that which the Ancients of Days wants to come or go, comes or goes. Right.
First thing you're going to do when you get in Havona is make friends. Thank this guy for getting you there.
For flying you through the dark gravity bodies without slamming you against them.
All right. Number seven, the reserve corps. A very large group of Sekhanafim, the seventh primary serials, are held in reserve for the unclassified duties and the emergency assignments of the realms. Not being highly specialized, they can function fairly well in any one of the capacities of their diverse associates. But such specialized work is undertaken only in emergencies. Their usual tasks are the performance of those generalized duties of a super universe, which do not fall within the scope of the angels, of specific assignment.
Yeah, the other six. Okay, and this is, they explained this a little bit more when we talked about tertiary Supernatum. If you remember, I made a point of, you know, showing you how they're trying to get you to understand that it's not like these reserve corps are interchangeable parts with the very specialized, you know, issues. But all of those specialists, those other six specialists, need assistance sometimes in an emergency. And these angels can strike SEP as assistance for the other six. And then they also, like they're saying, do some things on their own as well. The more general, less specific issues that need to be done. So in a sense, see, they're always doing the general stuff. They're either doing just independent general stuff or the general stuff related to the specific stuff. Okay, that's what these reserve corps are doing. You know? But don't think of them as being, you know, interchangeable parts with, you know, one of these guys can't just do exactly what, say, a voice of the seven master spirits does. Okay. That would, you know, if that would be the case, that would short circuit the circuits of Avona, for instance, if you want to think of this as, you know, I mean, there's the seven circuits of Avona, this sevenfoldness are distinct. They're, you know, so you can't, you know, don't blur them together. Yeah. But see, it is complicated that you have two sets of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. You have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 that gets you one primary, three secondaries, and three tertiaries. But then the next time you do that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, it's, you know, it's two for the primary and two for the three secondaries and two for the three tertiaries, et cetera, until you finally get to the seven of each of those, like the reserve core is the seventh. So you have these orthogonal counting, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So the serial things, see, is counting in the Paradise Trinity sense as opposed to counting in the Master Spirit sense. That's so it's complicated. But like I was saying, it's spot on. You know, that's why they kept repeating, the seventh, I mean, how do they say it? Like this seventh, you know, and every seventh one subsequently created. I mean, it just... Every single time, it just goes back around this same 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So there's no breaking from, they're getting, by nature, you know, like we were talking, Terry, see, by nature, not by personality, they're very distinct in this twofold way, distinct relative to the Master Spirits and distinct relative to the Paradise Trinity. And then you put absolutely unique personality on top of that, okay? And here, we're not talking about deity. It's being personalized. These angels are not God. You know, so it's more like what we understand. They have a particular flavor of self, mindful self by nature, that's a combination of Master Spirit and Paradise Trinity influence, you know? And then it's personalized. Now, a question you could ask, see, in your regard is, well, when we all get sorted out on paradise, is there something like this? When all is said and done, when you are perfected on paradise, can you finally very definitively put yourself in the XY plot of Spirit Trinity? Right. You know, where you fit in the spectrum of Paradise Trinity nature and infinite spirit nature. Does it work like that for us too?
At any given point, but does it fix you rigidly there forevermore if you do get localized in that way?
Well, I mean, you are, you know, you go on, but, you know, it's kind of in the same way that these angels grow. But they're definitely obviously more limited than we are as finaliters and stuff. But you know, we go on after we become a finaliter and move towards completeness, we're augmenting our nature. Okay, so we're not stuck in that. But in terms of perfecting that initial core, that real core that is wrapped around the adjuster, you know, you perfect that. And hence you finally will be able to sort of definitively know what your starting point nature is. Yeah. You know, it takes you that long. You know, these angels, boom, and as soon as they're birthed, their core nature is manifest and they're sorted. It takes us all the way to paradise to finally get that perfected so that we could, you know, then really see what our core starting nature is that we're then going to build upon. And with so many of these beings, they function in kind of a horizontal fashion. They don't really build upon what they start with.
So it's not like getting locked into a warp and a weft point, and then there you are.
All right, no, it's just a matter of solidifying your starting point from here to paradise. And then you move on from there. Yeah. So just like what normally... What is eventuated into the starting point of these angels takes us a whole evolution to eventually perfect. you know, and get it all wrapped around, get our personality all wrapped around it. Okay? All right. So, just wanted to throw that in so you can kind of appreciate the, so it isn't so abstract. Appreciate how even though we're talking about all these things that seem like we don't have to worry about them for billions of years or whatever, it is all part of this same pattern that we're in. And you can begin to reflect on, you know, what aspect of these beings' nature and nurture is really, you know, is similar to yours. Okay. All right. So the next time we'll get on to
the great Karnak. I can read your
see what they're reading in our minds. All right. Let's take a moment here.